All right, welcome back. You know, this is a beautiful hour, man. 9 o'clock hour on a Friday. Getting ready to jump on a beautiful airplane and go to Seattle to get to see up close the Skylar Thompson show, his fourth start of his career. Young career, I might add. And if you're going back on that, two starts in a regular season, his rookie year, actually got to play some other games and played early in some other games as well because of injuries. And then got to play in the playoff game, started Buffalo game. And then, of course, Tua played every game last year, and Skylar played in the fourth quarter of the last game against the Bills, and now we'll get his fourth start, full week to prepare, nice weapons, and no longer a rookie. Hell, he's not in his second year. He's third year, and they handpicked this guy, man, to be second quarterback. They, I think, had a pretty good idea early on that it wasn't going to be Mike White. It looked like, by the way, they played in the preseason. And when I say play, who got to play first, it looked like, and the opportunities that Skylar Thompson was their guy. And so with the injuries, man, like, you know, I said this coming out of camp, like, hey, I know all these positions are important, and they are, man. You just can't have a glaring weakness on a football team, or it will get exposed. But I did talk about the importance of the backup quarterback when half the league last year, more than half the league, very few, 13 or 14 quarterbacks played every game. Now, some because they weren't very good, but a lot of it was injury. And injured for a while or injured for the season. There were a lot of really good quarterbacks that missed a lot of time last year, meaning that backup quarterback position, especially with the history of what Tua has gone through with concussions, was going to be important. And here it is. Now, we were hoping we wouldn't be going through it in the second game of the regular season, but we are. So, man, I'm not making any excuses. Skylar, to me, he's a starter. And by the way, for his own career, so he doesn't have to struggle to be on teams and stuff, he has got a great opportunity to have success for the next four games. And, hey, man, you play well, and all of a sudden, people go, hey, man, this guy, he can play. Like, I hope we have that topic. I hope that conversation takes place down the road. Like, I know Tua's back, but, no, you want Skylar. I want Skylar to play well. I want people to go, hey, you know, Skylar's got a chance to be a full-time starter in this league. That's what you want to see, something close to that. Haven't seen it yet, but this is the first full week. In year three, not year one, when you're definitely still not sure of anything and clock's running out, Skylar's had a chance to see and be around for everything that Tua's gone through, short of the hits and the concussions. Skylar's been around to see it all. Everything. Motions and all the things that Mike's thinking and doing. He's been in there, along with Frank Smith, their coordinator, quarterback coach, all of it, to go through everything. He's been there the whole time. So I'm not treating him like a rookie, like, oh, my God, he's a rookie. And on top of that, I left out, you got a lot of guys that are really friggin' good to throw to. You got some really good weapons. You spent a lot of money to make sure you kept both those weapons here. First Waddle and then extended Tyreek Hill. You got a track meet of guys. Achan's been the workhorse. Mostert might be coming back. You've got some good tight ends. Haven't gotten much out of the tight end, but Jonnu Smith and, you know, Smythe. I like Durham Smythe. Got off to a rough start, but Durham Smythe's a really good receiver. So they've got some guys. They've got some guys that you can score points with this style. But Mike needs to call a game. I've said this. And I like Mike as a play caller. I'm not jumping off the bandwagon because he had a bad week last week. I did not like the game plan at all, but it was just me. Just me. Some of the things they did, by the way, the whole league's doing. And Mel Kiper mentioned this too when he was bringing out that stupid too deep should be outlawed. Dumb. Dumbest thing Mel Kiper has said. Stick to the mock drafts if that's going to be your take about what's going on with the offensive football right now. But checkdowns and bubble screens and a lot of stuff of just getting rid of the ball. You know what it looked like? It looked like the Jets offense last night. because that's what the Jets did. I don't know how many people had a chance to stay and watch a little Monday Night Football last night, but Aaron Rodgers got rid of the ball quickly to his receivers, slants, curls, little crossing routes, and he got the ball outside to his receivers one-on-one, and that is some of the worst tackling that I've ever seen from a Patriots team. That is the kind of tackling that gets defensive coordinators fired. Now, it's early in the year. It will get better, but the yak yards, yards after catch, yards after first hit, man, they were big and a big part of Aaron Rodgers' 280 yards last night. And by the way, Aaron Rodgers looked a lot better last night. Now, I don't know how much of that is the Patriots, but 27 to 35, 281 yards, two touchdowns. And yeah, man, there was a lot of yards after catch in that game last night, and that 24-3 win. The Jets over the Patriots looked terrible, by the way. Seven sacks, the defense. Jets' defense looked like what everybody thought they would. But if you have 139 total yards, you're probably losing. You have 139 yards and start looking at 8, 9, 10 first downs, 11 first. You're probably losing, right? That's probably not the formula for winning, and it was an ugly game. It was. We've given Amazon Prime now two uglies for Thursday night games. We are one of them, and the Jets are 2-1. That's all that matters. I could say, they're 2-1, and they do look a lot better with Aaron Rodgers playing. And that game plan last night, I called that. If your quarterback only has to do that, and he made some nice throws, don't get me wrong, put the throws where they needed to be, but he wasn't throwing the ball 50 yards, 40 yards down the field, not last night. Smart game, what is that, 11 games? They played in like 3 days. They played like 11 games or something to start the season. So they'll get a little bit more time, but for the Dolphins, Skylar Thompson show. Here we go, man. Great game plan, and I was glad to see all his weapons, especially the two guys on the outside saying, "Hey, man, we believe in Skylar. We've all caught passes from him in practice, and can't wait for the game plan that Mike's putting the comeback plan for Mike's game plan. Mike McDaniel to see what he can come up with against this Seattle defense, which is." Pretty damn good in the secondary. Got some really good corners. Got a great safety. Got some good players. They're 2-0, but, you know, you're 2-0 and you beat the Patriots in overtime and you beat Denver. You probably have some questions about how good you are yet. So hopefully the Dolphins will bring their A game, and a lot of guys that are a little banged up will be able to play so that everything can go. All right, listen, we've got Mike Florio going to join us. We got a lot to talk about with Mike Florio this morning, as we'll be back with him from Pro Football Talk in just a minute. But first, I want to take a second to tell you about Chapman Partnership. I always like talking about this great organization for the homeless down in Dade County. Two facilities, almost 1,000 men, women, and children are staying at the two facilities. It's so much more. I know when you hear homeless, sometimes you think, oh, well, they come by and grab a bite to eat, and they're back out on the streets. And they're in everybody. No. It's about rehabilitation. It really is. It's about providing caring support and wraparound services, and you can make a big difference. I'm telling you right now, the goal is always 3 to 4 months to help them rehabilitate them through whether it's mental illness, health issues, all that. We got so many great doctors that donate their time to Chapman Partnership at both facilities. I can't thank them. And you get people like Bam Adebayo, who donate their time and lots of money to be there. The Heat's been involved with them. You can make a big difference and make a huge impact at Chapman's educational initiatives, including after-school programming, workforce training, life skills workshops. They do it all. They really do. For just as little as $50 that you could give to create a brighter future for those we serve. Hey, you want to make a big difference and help somebody? And part of the rehabilitation for the homeless, getting a second chance and taking advantage of it, please join me at WQAM to show your support to one of my favorite charities that really makes a difference in our community. Let's help support families and individuals overcoming homelessness at Chapman this fall. Go online to chapmanpartnership.org. Whether you want to donate your time, whether you want to give money, tell you what, you'll feel good when you get involved with Chapman Partnership, the men, women, and children, and all the great people that work at Chapman Partnership. Thank you.
What's that sound? That's the sound of Downy Unstoppable scent beads going into your washing machine and giving your clothes freshness that lasts all day long. There it is again. It's like music to your ears, or more like music to your nose. That freshness is irresistible. Let's get a Downy Unstoppable bottle shake. And now a sniff solo. Nice. Get 6 times longer lasting freshness plus odor protection with Downy Unstoppables in wash scent beads.
All right, welcome back here on a Friday. Miami Dolphins getting set this afternoon to head out to Seattle. And that means it's time for a little Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Mike, good morning. How you doing?
Joe, I'm doing great, buddy. How are you?
We're doing great. We're trying to give you as much information. We're trying to give you as much substance as we possibly can for Pro Football Talk. I want to ask you about this Tua thing. So he's going to be out 5 weeks at least on IR minimum with the off week, bye week as well. And then what? And then what happens after the 5-step protocol, which I'm guessing he will pass by then? What happens then, Mike?
Well, Joe, let's take a step back. And let's consider the broader culture in the NFL as it relates to concussions. It was October of 2009 that the NFL was forced to take head injuries seriously when Congress brought Commissioner Roger Goodell and then Executive Director of the NFLPA, Demore Smith, to Capitol Hill for a hearing. In the aftermath of that, the message was simple, and this is where Congress involvement can be beneficial. Basically, you have a mess, and if you don't clean it up yourself, we'll clean it up for you, and you might not like how we do it. So the NFL beefed up the return to play protocol, and since then, now at first, guy'd have a concussion. Typically, he'd miss a game,
right,
and then come back. At some point in the past several years, the presumption flipped, and we saw a lot of guys who come back right away, including last year. Brock Purdy had a concussion Monday night against Minnesota, was cleared to play the following Sunday, 6 days later. So this has been, and it has become, just kind of a box-checking exercise. And the NFL is sensitive to that, but that really is what it is. The guy wants to play. The team wants him to play. He has the concussion. He has to progress through this step, this step, this step, this step, boom, and can play. Rarely do you see a guy put on injured reserve for concussions, and it's happened to Tua twice. And I say all that because I don't know that 4 weeks is enough to allow anyone to make responsible, big picture, short-term and long-term decisions. Because when he comes back, he's one play away from another concussion. That's the problem. This wasn't some fluke injury. This wasn't like the Damar Hamlin situation, the extremely rare commotio cordis, which prompts cardiac arrest from a blow to the chest. It's just kind of a fluke weird thing. We know guys get concussions, guys get hit in the head. And for Tua, they seem to be happening more easily, or they seem to be more severe than they should be given the quality of the hit. So I just think that the only way to truly make a good long-term decision and get the air out of the balloon before you make that strategic call about what you're going to do with your career, I feel like that's something that needs to happen after the season. I just don't know how the issues that are prompting the Dolphins to put him on IR so they can buy some time and make some good decisions, I don't know that those go away after 4 weeks, given the history, given the severity, and given the reality that he could get another concussion in his next game back.
So the follow-up to that is, so some independent neurologist, because he does want to come back and play, and obviously the team would like to have him when he's ready, and they're listening to all these professionals. So what independent neurologist is going to put his name on and tell the league, I think it's okay for him to come back?
Well, that's the problem, Joe. At some point, there will be a player, and it probably happened to Job at Best 13 years ago. You just get to a point where no one will say you can play. And one of the things that we have to be realistic about, and I tried to write something about this yesterday. Michael Hawley and I discussed it on PFT Live on Wednesday. Even though everyone is saying and doing all the right things, and appropriately so publicly, privately, these are businesses that strategize. What's in our best interest? What do we want? And you've got the player, you've got the team, and you've got the league. The team may want him back. The player may want to come back. The league may not want this.
That's right.
Does the league really want a guy who is one snap away from another concussion, which becomes NBC Nightly News, ABC Nightly News, CBS Evening News, morning shows, and gets parents to start saying, maybe we shouldn't let these kids play tackle football? And see, you say independent neurologist, and you're right, partially. Independent of the team, not independent of the league, independent of the team, still beholden to the league. If the league doesn't want him to play anymore, and I don't want to be overly cynical, but then again, I've been covering this league for 25 years. If the league doesn't want him to play anymore, knowing glances, winks and nods, conversations off the record, and maybe he can't get cleared. And the weirdest outcome here, Joe, would be the Dolphins doctors, independent doctors, NFL doctors don't clear him, and he exercises his prerogative under the CBA to get a second opinion. And there's a doctor he finds that does clear him. Then what happens?
Yeah. No, boy. Yeah. Wow. Well, we've got some time now. We got some Skylar Thompson time now starting this Sunday here. And everybody's saying all the right things. What do you expect? He played a lot his rookie year. Got some starts. Now he gets his fourth start. Did not play at all last year to go to Seattle in that loud building and play. Coming off an offense that hasn't been very good the first 2 weeks.
Well, he got thrown into a tough spot last Thursday night. The offense looked obviously and clearly different with him out there. I didn't see any of that, and I call it shell game stuff underneath, which is very effective. I don't mean it in a pejorative way. Like, where's the ball? Hey, the quarterback's got it. He goes this way. This guy's this way. This guy's who's got the freaking football? And I didn't see that from Skylar Thompson. I think that's a key component of the offense that requires reps and timing and practice and over and over. And I assume they've spent a lot of time this week getting Skylar Thompson to the point where he can still do those things that Tua was doing so well. That was Tua's, and it is his superpower, working that underneath stuff that keeps defenses on their toes about where the football is. So that's what I'm going to be looking for on Sunday. But this is just a tough, tough thing. Think about what this team has been through in the first two games of the season. I wrote something about the Tyreek Hill situation, just an update on that earlier. It's like, it's only been 12 days, and it feels like a lifetime ago that he had that incident before the week one game against the Jaguars. So this team has been through a lot. One of the reasons that I thought they'd lose last Thursday night, just it was a lot to go through. The win, the off-field stuff, the scrutiny of it. You know, a little frustration I think may have flashed from Tyreek Hill yesterday. Now, it's one thing to read the words on paper. It's another thing to see the press conference, but you know, he made a comment, he was asked about Tua, and he's like, well, I'm sure you all have asked everybody in the locker room about this. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
These issues become things that take over the team. And, you know, are they distractions? I don't know. But when you have every player who's asked about how's Tua doing a week after every player was asked about the Tyreek Hill situation, it wears on a team mentally when the team they're getting ready to play isn't dealing with any of that stuff.
You know, it's funny you said that, because the day before the game, this Thursday night game on Wednesday, Tyreek is answering questions about what he thinks about what he just went through with the police. So yeah, and I was thinking, wow, he was being asked questions about it. It wasn't like he goes, hey, I want to start with this, but he had to answer that stuff, and that was the big question. So we got a lot of other stuff. I saw a weird one. I'm not asking you to take shots at anybody, or you may agree. Mel Kiper Jr. came out with this Outlaw the Two Deep, which I thought was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, but I don't know how you feel about it. I understand the scoring is way down. I guess it's at about 21.5 points per game right now is the league average. And by the way, we're one of them. We averaged 29 a game last year. We're down half that at 15 right now. I don't know if you can do anything else to try to cut the legs off of this of the NFL defenses, and they've already done. My God, I just think some teams going to have to make some adjustments. I think some of it's quarterback play. I think some of it's coaching and the offensive line. What's been your take on a slow start from a lot of these offenses?
Well, first of all, and I say this with all due respect and deference to the career that Mel Kiper basically made for himself out of thin air, but why the hell are we hearing anything from Mel Kiper in September? Isn't he supposed to be rabbit hole studying film and grinding tape and getting ready to entertain us in March and April?
Correct.
I just thought it was weird that Mel Kiper has any take, and that's always been the disconnect. He's college football film studier, period. And now he's got this weird take, and this does not help him to the extent he's trying to gain legitimacy beyond.
Yeah, that was stupid. That was really dumb. I was wondering what those former guys are going to say. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, look, I understand the frustration, and I wonder how much of it is driven by, hey, I said these young quarterbacks are going to be good, and they're not very good. Well, there's got to be a reason for it other than the fact that they're not doing very well. Let's get rid of the too high safety. you got 11 guys on the field on defense. You deploy them however you want. You know, this isn't Pro Bowl rules where you can't blitz. And the NFL has done many things over the last 50 years to pump up offenses. I guess it would have been easy in the 70s to dictate which defenses are permitted and which aren't, like basketball does with no zone defense at the NBA level. It's just a weird, kooky take. And if they are interested in goosing offense, and the NFL is, because the years where scoring is high, Joe, I get all the press releases from the league saying, oh, the most scoring.
Right.
You know, they bathe in that stuff when it's happening, and they ignore it when it's not. But if they're going to change rules, the last thing they're going to do is tell a – how do you even enforce that? What do you do? You throw a flag because the safety was up in the box and he ran back to help cover the receiver? I mean, it's asinine when you think about it.
Yeah.
All due respect to Mel Kiper, it's asinine.
Yeah. So last night I don't know. I'm not a huge Aaron Rodgers fan, but I thought he looked pretty good last night in the game. So he comes off. They get a win. He has a good win. They're 2-1. That thing with Robert Saleh was really weird towards the end of the game when he came off the field. And it just, Mike, maybe it's just me, but what Robert Saleh and Aaron Rodgers said after the game about it just didn't really match up with those two kind of, I couldn't see, obviously hear what they were saying, but what I thought they were saying, it just didn't match up. It felt to me a little bit like Aaron Rodgers still pissed about he threw him under the bus during minicamp and said, oh, what'd you think of that, and had to fine him?
Well, first of all, I think that Aaron Rodgers should have been at the mandatory minicamp, and the excuse and the explanation that he eventually gave doesn't hold water because he talked about what the timeline is for the offseason program. He's been in this for 15 years. He knows when the mandatory minicamp happens or when it could happen. That was all just baloney, and he deliberately and intentionally ditched the mandatory minicamp, and he got what he should have gotten for it, and he should have been there with his team. The thing last night, now, it was a far cry from the time that Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins did the push and shove and hold me back and get out of my face thing after the Vikings came from behind to beat the Lions on a walk-off field goal. The thing that I thought was the most significant, when Rodgers walks away, he gives a look back to Saleh, which is kind of side-eye, stink-eye combined. And, you know, Rodgers doesn't do anything accidentally. But there was that, just that look. I don't know what it was. Sometimes our true feelings pop through our facial expressions, things we aren't really consciously trying to control. And there was just something about that look that made me think, is everything okay with these two?
Especially
when you're dealing with a guy who's got a history of interpersonal conflict, who if you cross him, I'm still working on the Ian O'Connor book about Rodgers. I mean, it really is weird. If you cross him, he cuts you off. He completely and totally cuts you off. There's no reconciliation, even with family. I mean, something happened in his immediate family that caused him to shut down all of his family.
Everybody.
Like one uncle, extended family, grandma that he used to call every Sunday morning before the game. She shut out too. And it's sad that that happens. I'm a big believer that, you know, family is all we have, and we have to find a way to work through our differences and mend fences with family. And even if it means one party to a conflict has to just accept that, you know, I don't agree with what they did, but that's what unconditional love is. And so when you're dealing with a guy who has that history and you see that look fired at his coach, yeah, you're going to wonder what the hell's going on here.
Yeah, I feel better because I was thinking the same thing. And, I thought, hey, you got a nice win.
The look, not the shove. The look was the thing that got my attention.
Yeah. Hey, finally, Bryce Young gets benched. What was your take on the benching? I know a lot of people going, now he's screwed. Now the confidence is going to be shot putting Andy Dalton in there.
Well, look, I always want to know where decisions like this originate. I think owners meddle a lot more than we know because they don't want us to know that they meddle. The only thing better than being rich and famous is being rich. And if you're making decisions, if you're perceived as making decisions, you become notorious on top of being rich. And I think a lot of owners want to be able to stir the pot without being spotted holding the spoon. And David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, has shown in his short time, relatively speaking, as owner of the team, that he does imprint his will on the organization, like pushing them toward Bryce Young last year, and now he's fallen out of love with Bryce Young. And there's an alternate universe out there where the Panthers took C.J. Stroud and the Texans took Bryce Young. And a lot of people had Young ahead of Stroud. This wasn't some weird curveball that the Panthers threw on the NFL. And, people weren't saying at the time, how in the world are the Panthers considering Bryce Young? There were people out there who thought he could play. And I just wonder, if the Panthers had taken Stroud and the Texans had taken Young, would Young have panned out and would Stroud have gotten benched this week? The one thing that we overlook in the National Football League, when a quarterback goes somewhere and doesn't perform well, we hang it on him. And I think that in many cases, it's not his fault. It's partially his fault, but it's not all his fault.
Agree.
Look at how the Jets have ruined quarterbacks. And look at what Geno Smith did after 8 years in exile. Look at what Sam Darnold's doing in Minnesota this year. And I think the Panthers possibly fall into that category. And I think they owe it to Bryce Young to let him go somewhere else, let him pick his next destination. I understand they hold his contractual rights and they have no intent to trade him, yada, yada, yada. But if you're not going to play this guy and you've decided he can't play, let him go somewhere else where maybe he can. But see, teams don't like to do that either, Joe, because they don't want to look bad.
Correct.
They don't want to make it look like it was them. They want people to think it was the player, not the organization.
Boy, Mike, I tell you, we've been watching, and you and I have been talking about these first-round quarterbacks that work out and don't work out, and you're right. We don't talk enough about the system. We don't talk enough about the coaching, and we don't talk enough about the talent around them, which not very good in a lot of cases. Hey, Mike, thank you, man.
Let me throw this out.
Yeah.
Because I've been talking about this a lot. Now that you have these incoming players who have NIL money in the bank, when will one of them stand up and say to a dysfunctional team with a history of ruining quarterbacks, if you draft me, I'm just going to sit out all year and live off my NIL money, and I'll re-enter the draft next year?
You know, the only thing, by the way, we have talked a lot about that. Mike, the only problem there is that first contract, especially if you're a high pick, 28, 30, 31, 32 million. A lot of that, as you know, is signing bonus up front. They're not making that kind of NIL money. We got a guy down here.
But you have enough to live on.
Yeah, you do.
You can weather the storm. And you get the first contract, but that's the only contract you ever get. The second contract is going to be far more valuable than the first one.
Yeah, That could happen. No, but then the injury stuff comes up as well, and going back to college, and now maybe my team's not as good.
College. I'm just sitting out.
Oh,
I'm
you're just sitting out. Out.
I'm okay. Not going to play.
Wow.
I'll see you next year.
Yeah.
I'll just stay in shape, and I'll at least the next year, the player's got a better chance of going where he wants to go. This whole draft thing, we've been brainwashed into thinking it's an honor and a privilege. It's not. For some of these guys, it's a career death sentence for some of these guys.
Yeah.
Right?
A lot of these quarterbacks.
Their career started.
Oh, man. Hey, Mike, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. See you, buddy.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. He's fired up today. We got fired up. I don't know.
I like fired up, Joe. I like fired up Florio.
All right. We've got to go to break. But before we do, before we hit the weekend here, man, and get back, and we'll talk some more about some of this stuff. I want to tell you about Harvey Cohen and Gary Judah, even here on a Friday. I'm talking about the partners of Cohen and Judah, injury law firm, personal injury attorneys in Plantation. And, yes, the same partners who handle your case from start to finish, more than 30 years of experience each, big enough to go to trial and get you multi-million dollar results, small enough just to call you back. No big timing. They're not going to hand it off to a new attorney out of law school and give them 14K, and now all of a sudden you got a problem because you can't find them, you can't hear from them, they're too busy, don't call you back. It's frustrating. Go to CohenandJudah.com, read the reviews, partners who you can always reach. They'll always be there for you. You can always get them on the phone and answer all your questions. Injuries caused by negligence of others, go to CohenandJudah.com. Learn more about them. You like these guys. 866-324-7333. That's 866-FAIR-FEE. Remember, they don't pay other lawyers to do the work you hire them to do. Trip and fall, car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or anything else. Harvey Cohen and Gary Judah. And welcome back. I want to thank Mike Florio for being with us, Frank Gore for being with us, Don Bailey Jr., our high school insider, Larry Bluestein. Man, Chaminade is coming back strong, and a lot of folks, by the way, a lot of people, first of all, going to be driving up to two games going on. I think both 7 o'clock games, if I'm not mistaken. Canes going to be in Tampa to take on South Florida. That's a 7 o'clock start. Expected to be a sellout. And Cal, the big one for you up there, the Golden Bears, 3-0, going to play Florida State 0-3. Is still the weirdest thing I have said all morning. And I say a lot of weird things, but Cal 3-0, FSU 0-3. And to the Mendoza family, Fernando Mendoza, what a great story. Starting quarterback at Columbus. Matter of fact, his little brother took over after he did. Fernando went as a walk-on to Cal, earned a scholarship, and has now been the starting quarterback. It started last year and is off to a great start from Columbus High School. So I know, I'm guessing the whole family and the Mendoza gang will all be up there in Tallahassee as the Golden Bears. It's kind of weird to say. How many years do you think we've gone, hey, Cal's going to Tallahassee, they'll win? They got a legit chance to win this time, though. This is it's a weird
one.
Have
you taken the merch out yet? Have you been wearing the Letterman jacket yet?
No. I don't wear that. No. I'm afraid they'll hit me up for money. So, it is a strange one to think that Cal's got a chance to beat Florida State. And by the way, there's the biggest story in college football by far is how bad Florida State's been. It's just did not see that one coming for college football. Looking forward to for that. And then all the games in the NFL coming up as well should be good. You know what's crazy? I think Baltimore at Dallas is going to be a really good game. I do. I know the Eagles at the Saints. Trev, what do you think? What do you think about your Eagles going to Saints? Are playing great football, man.
I have the Saints dropping 50 on the Eagles since the Eagles can't stop a cold at running right now.
So are they blaming Vic Fangio? No, Trev.
They're blaming everybody right now. Everybody's blaming Sirianni after Monday night's game, but I am going to go after Kellen Moore because that dude needs to get roasted a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but I really feel the Saints.
Hey, I didn't have a problem with the call at the end of the game.
I didn't either. I just don't.
He just dropped it.
Yeah.
I know now everybody's, well, he drops a lot. He drops the football a lot. But that, he catches that, turns it up.
Game over. Yeah.
The snaps are done. Mm-hmm. That's it. Nobody has any timeouts. It's over.
It happened. That's football.
But I know a lot of people. Yeah, it was a second guess special what happened, and, you know, because he does drop it, so the clock stops and give Atlanta too much time. But Vic Fangio seems to be kind of getting a hall pass for having a defense that's so bad.
It should be going after the general manager because he made a bonehead decision to trade Hassan Reddick and signing Bryce Huff.
Yeah, but nobody can sign Hassan Reddick.
No, but still the worst.
Is he going to get hungry to get some checks, or is he just going to – how long are the Jets going to – I guess they
– Johnson has a torn Achilles, so they have to sign him. Think about it. It happened on Sunday night during the Titans game. Anyways,
I don't know, man. They had 7 sacks last. I don't know.
Bryce Huff didn't even show up in the box score. That's how bad it was.
I don't know the Jets. By the way, Jets looked a lot better last night. But now you go, okay, they looked a lot better. But that Patriots team is really bad. That was the worst defense I've seen the Patriots have. One thing about Belichick's teams, mm-hmm. He had some bad offenses, but even he had a good defense at the end.
That's probably Can you say that's the worst defense since 2011 when Vance Wilfork was injured?
don't remember. Only you would remember back that far, but I've never seen a New England Patriot team tackle that poorly.
That was like that's like Eagles defense under Juan Castillo almost. That's saying something.
See, you got me again. You hit me with a history lesson there. Vic Fangio's defense, by the way, has really, really struggled. 25th against a run, 157 yards a game, 6.4 average. They are getting chopped up in the running game, and they're 28th against the pass. And I'd love to know on the last play for the touchdown, what was that coverage? You gave him a little move inside. And it was like they went zone or something. The guy was nowhere around him. He just turned and caught it.
Darius Slay is public enemy number one right now. So I can't wait for that dude to get
Yeah, boy, the way, you don't want to struggle in that town, do you?
No, you don't want to struggle in any sport in that town anyways.
No, that's not as friendly as this one. Well, we had a crazy night last night. I came in thinking this was all football today. And, of course, Shohei Ohtani put together – I mean, it's the greatest game I've ever seen on TV that I happened to be watching because I didn't go last night. Three home runs, two stolen bases, six hits, six for six, and 10 RBI. And the last guy, now listen, the last guy that was pitching to me already had 50, and the guy goes, here's 51. I would love to know, and I didn't hear, and if somebody could let me know before I get off the air, how far were those two home runs that he hit? He hit two. A country mile.
Oh, yeah. Those are like upper tanks, like third row to the last deck.
Those felt like 450 to 460, but I didn't see footage on those bad boys. But good God, were those things hit.
Barry Bonds would be proud of those.
Mark McGwire would be. But you're right. Bonds juiced up would like him too. McGwire juiced up.
Sosa juiced up.
Sosa juiced up all had that same kind of same kind of power.
Bagwell when he was clean.
I don't know. You don't think Bagwell was clean, do you?
I don't think so. People say he's clean, but I don't trust it.
We'll never know. Some of them beat it. Pudge Rodriguez beat it. I heard Pudge was dirty. Then he came back skinny. You don't remember because you weren't here. He told us he's off McDonald's. What happened to you, Pudge? And he goes, I just got in shape and I stopped eating fast food and McDonald's. This was my favorite. And I was like, come on, man. Everybody knows the Texas Rangers team.
Oh, yeah.
In the old days was dirty. It was going through the whole thing.
Any of those guys.
So, yeah. That's over, though. We got to let that go. Everything's pretty clean now, is it?
It's too clean.
No, man. These guys, look at this guy last night. This guy hits it. He hits the ball.
Yeah.
Like a guy. I mean, on steroids. He rips it. I mean, he's hitting the ball, and he's got to be clean. You know they're checking him.
He's definitely 100% clean, but some other people, we don't know. Could be the
clean. No. I think guys, they lose too much. I think they've learned it's just not worth it.
True. You don't want to be.
You know what? I have never once thought Judge was dirty.
I think he's clean.
But I've never said to myself, he's dirty. I've never thought that. And like I'm also naive sometimes, but I think these guys are clean after all that stuff they went through and they saw that the guys went through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of them, A-Rod's been a nice comeback story, what he's done with his career, PR-wise, but
oh, yeah.
There's a lot of guys disappeared.
A lot of them have disappeared in the face of the earth.
A lot.
And also, especially pitchers, too, when you look at they did
Roger Clemens still fighting it, and every time somebody sees him, they go, Roger's dirty.
Andy Pettit, too.
Well, Andy admitted to.
I don't believe him. Anyway.
Andy came clean. How much you coming clean on? I don't know. But listen, guys, back then, to be fair, if you see somebody having success in doing it and it's getting them more money, more other guys are going to do it. They're going to do it, right or wrong. They're going to do it. Like it's working for him. Hell, I'm going to go ahead and do it too. All right, listen. That's I don't know how the hell I jumped on that. I apologize for that, but. We are out of time. Want to thank everybody for being with us here, and we'll see you again Monday morning. I get in early in the morning, but I'm coming in, man. I believe Dave Hyde from the Sun Sentinel is going to be in with me as well. So have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy all the great football. We'll see you Monday.